Case number 25-5175, Sean Neely, Appellant versus Hong Tsao, Acting Secretary of the Navy. Mr. Thayer for the Appellant, Mr. Bracken for the Appellant.
Mr. Thayer, we'll hear from you whenever you're ready.
Chief Judge, Your Honors, may it please the Court. My name is Dylan Thayer, and I am here on behalf of the Appellant, Mr. Sean Neely. The Physical Disability Board of Review, or PDBR, reviewed Mr. Neely's physical evaluation board, which separated him from the Navy, and constructively and retroactively placed him on the temporary disability retirement list at 50%. The board then conducted another constructive and retroactive evaluation and placed Mr. Neely, or excuse me, they conducted a constructive and retroactive evaluation, placed Mr. Neely as 10% disabled and removed him from the temporary disability retirement list 6 months later. And that was arbitrary.
That was all in one decision, however, correct?
Yes, it was one decision, Your Honor, and they made two moves. They placed him on the temporary disability retirement list, and then they constructively and retroactively evaluated him as 10% disabled. And that was arbitrary and capricious to do so, Your Honor. And it was arbitrary and capricious for two reasons. The first reason, and the most important reason, is that the board lacks any legal authority to conduct constructive and retroactive evaluations of service members. Under VA Schedule 4.129, when a mental health condition is significant enough to bring about a service member's separation from the service, the rating agency must give him an evaluation of 50% disabled and then schedule a follow-up examination within 6 months of the veteran's separation from the service. Mr. Neely was separated from the Navy on August 17, 2008 for his service-connected PTSD. The Navy was required to apply the VA rating schedule as of January 2008 under the Wounded Warrior Act. That can be found at 10 U.S.C. 1216-AA1A. 10 U.S.C. 1554A, which is the statute that governs the PDBR, does not give the PDBR the authority to conduct constructive or retroactive evaluations. It only gives the PDBR the authority to review the findings of a PEB and then make its own rating assessment and recommend it to the Secretary. Nor does 10 U.S.C. 1210 provide the authority to constructively or retroactively evaluate a member. Nor does the VA rating schedule provide the authority to constructively or retroactively evaluate a member. In fact, as I mentioned—
Wasn't this done under 10 U.S.C. 1554A that authorizes the PDBR to modify the disability ratings? And it seemed that the thing that's confusing to me about your argument is it seems that the PDBR made one decision, which was to retroactively apply the provision for people who have PTSD, which I think is completely appropriate, and then give your client, you know, 6 months worth of benefits associated with that. And then to say, but the permanent rating is 10%, because this whole thing was retroactive and constructive, seemed like it was all relying on the same provision, 1554A, which allows retroactive consideration. And it seems to me that you want the benefit of 1554A for the retroactive consideration that gave him the 6 months of benefits, but you want to take away the 1554 authority with respect to the permanent disability rating. And it seemed to me that it was all one package based upon one provision, and it's hard to cut it up the way you seem to want to, which is like, yes, it's okay to provide the benefit under 1554A, but it's not okay to, I guess, then lower it under the permanent rating based on other statutes that PDBR wasn't relying on.
Well, I see matters a little differently, Your Honor, and that's why I corrected myself at the beginning about the constructive and retroactive reevaluation, because I do think it's an important distinction. So the PDBR is empowered, and you can find this in 10 U.S.C. 1554A1 and C1. It's empowered with reviewing the findings of the Physical Evaluation Board. Mm-hmm. It's empowered with reviewing those findings. It is not empowered to conduct its own findings. And so that's why the PDBR reviewed the findings of the PEB and found, okay, the
VA— But it can modify, right?
Right. Yes, it reviewed the findings of the PEB and it found, okay, because the PTSD was significant enough to bring about his separation from the Navy, it should have been rated as 50% under the VA rating schedule. It was only rated at 10%. That was wrong by the PEB. So the board is on firm statutory footing when it did that. What the board is not permitted to do under statute or under the VA regulation, which only provides for a rating within 6 months, it only provides for a further evaluation within 6 months. The board then issued another constructive and retroactive, it issued a constructive and retroactive evaluation of Mr. Neely and found him 10% disabled 6 months after he'd been placed on the temporary disability retirement list. The first move was permitted by the statute because the board is permitted to review the findings of the PEB. The second move was not permitted because the board is not permitted, the PDBR is not permitted to act on its own authority to constructively and retroactively evaluate a service member. And there's no statutory or regulatory authority that permits the board to do that.
Can you explain to me why not? Because I thought 1554A said that they are authorized to modify the rating and to issue a new rating. So why can't they?
They may issue a new rating by reviewing the PEB's findings. What they cannot do is review the medical record that takes place further on down the road and issue their own constructive and retroactive findings. They're only permitted to review the findings of a PEB. And so because the PEB said his PTSD is significant enough.
It says it's based on the records of the armed force concerned and such other evidence as may be presented. Why can't they look at that based on as other evidence that may be presented?
I think they are permitted to look at other evidence, Your Honor, clearly, but I think that asking that phrase permitted to look at other evidence to then find when there's no statutory language that permits them to constructively evaluate him, to then find that that permits them to conduct a whole new analysis when their only function as afforded by Congress is to review the findings of a PEB, I think that's really a stretch of the statutory language.
Even though it says they can issue a new disability rating?
They can issue a new disability rating based on their review of the PEB if they found that the PEB
does. And such other evidence as may be presented.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. That's right. I don't think that that gives them the authority to conduct a whole new evaluation. I think that they're confined to reviewing the evidence of the PEB and then issuing new ratings if they found that the PEB, as here, did not comply with the VA rating schedule. And I think the second reason why the decision of the board was arbitrary and capricious is because even if that authority is permissible, the PDBR's decision to issue a 10% disability rating was not supported by the evidence.
Before
and was
you
contrary
get into that,
law.
Counsel, can I just ask a
yes, of course,
maybe just a housekeeping threshold question? After this was remanded, the PDBR issued a recommendation. There's no indication in the record about whether the secretary accepted and finalized that recommendation. Has the secretary done that?
I believe so, Your Honor. I believe that I think that in order to be finalized, the secretary must accept the PDBR's recommendation.
That is absolutely correct. So this might be a question for the government, but it would at least, if it has not been finalized, there would at least be a question about whether we have a final agency action in front of us or not, and how that might be remedied. But okay, I understand that. If we'll go back to the first statutory argument you were making.
Yes.
It seems to me that you may be right, but the way you're viewing this PDBR is almost as limited to the types of authority a court has when reviewing agency action. All you can do is set aside decisions that were made. You cannot go further and sort of reach what you think is the right result.
I think that's exactly right, Your Honor.
But I want you to respond to what I take to be the opposite argument, right? Which is that that's fundamentally different from what Congress envisioned here, which is a fundamentally retroactive entity, the PDBR, that can come in after the fact, take new evidence, issue new ratings, something a court could never do anything analogous to that. And then finally, this process ends with a correction of military records. So just to simplify that, one might think of this PDBR as a much more active entity that comes in and tries to get things right. And it's not constrained in the ways you're saying. So I'd love to hear your answer to those.
Of course, Your Honor. If I may start with Your Honor's final point, I think that, you know, regardless of what the board's function of review is, if they make a new recommendation, whether they're just reviewing the PEB or whether they're acting of their own initiative, they're going to correct the military record. So I don't think that's very probative either way. So, and then getting back to, I think we have to go back to the language of the statute, Your Honor. And the language of the statute says, review the PEB. It doesn't say act on your own accord. It doesn't say act sua sponte. And I think just as, you know, I think the analogy to this court is, or a district court is perhaps a bit of a stretch because the district court does have the authority to act sua sponte on certain issues. Courts have inherent authority. This board only has the authority that's been given to it by Congress, and its authority only extends to reviewing the findings of a PEB. I see that my time is up. I wanted to briefly mention, as I said, that I think that the board's rating was, which it finally gave Mr. Neely, in addition to not being permitted by law, was also arbitrary and capricious because it wasn't provided for under the evidence in front of the board. And this exact same factual scenario was found in a similar case, Keltner versus the United States, out of the Court of Federal Claims, where the board reviewed an analysis of the Department of Veterans Affairs. They kept the analysis, but they discarded the rating. And the court found that arbitrary and capricious. I think the same is true here, Your Honors. And so I will
ask about that because
you may, of course, Your Honor.
In looking at the criteria for a 10% disability rating and a 30% disability rating, I can see how someone could potentially fit both. And it seems to me that your client could be one such person who could kind of fit into both. And then it's just a question of, I guess, discretion in terms of which is better, a better fit. And I guess I'm wondering if these are intended to be mutually exclusive or overlapping, these criteria, like 10% versus 30%. Because it seems like, depending on who the fact finder is, you could end up in either place reasonably.
I think that's exactly right, Your Honor. I think you could end up in either place, but I think what's so important about this is the VA reviewed all of this evidence. The VA reviewed the mitigating evidence. The VA reviewed the exacerbating evidence. And the PDBR is required to apply the VA schedule, and they're required to, you know, apply it to the extent feasible. And a policy disagreement, a different medical opinion, that's not unfeasibility. If there's a difference between the PEB rating and the VA rating, then they're required to apply the VA rating to the extent feasible.
I don't see that they're required to apply the VA rating because it seems that the two ratings are for different purposes and at different points in time. And, you know, one measures, you know, where you were when you were separated and your fitness for military duty, and the other measures an ongoing thing within the civilian community. So I don't think that they need to adopt the VA rating.
They don't need to adopt it uncritically. The language from the statute, 10 U.S.C. 1216 AA1A, they must apply it to the extent feasible. And a policy disagreement or a difference of medical opinion under DOD regulations is not unfeasible. That's prohibited by the Department of Defense's own regulations. And so here, I think what this really boils down to, and why the comparison with Keltner is so apt, is because this is a situation where you're right, it's close. But under the regulations, if it's close, the reasonable doubt goes to the service member. And the VA reviewed all of this evidence. They reviewed it. They took it very carefully. They evaluated it. And they came up with a finding that 30% was the proper rating. And so for the PDBR to move off of that rating without a detailed explanation.
If I may, I think the language you were quoting about the extent feasible does not indicate deference to the VA's rating. It's using the schedule, which is the VA rating, which the VASRD, which nobody disputes. So I don't think there's any kind of deference or presumption that you're going to apply the rating that the VA assigned.
I want to be clear, Your Honor. I think it's an important distinction. The Secretary is not required to apply the rating, right? There's no requirement, but I do think that using the schedule to the extent feasible means having some respect for what the schedule says and how it's been applied in terms of the VA evaluation. And I think that, you know,
they're supposed to consider the VA evaluation. But I don't think there's any deference.
Well, I think they're supposed to, I think if there's a rating, you have to use it to the extent feasible in a policy disagreement or a difference of medical opinion. It does not constitute unfeasibility. And I think that that's all we really have here on the basis of the board. They have a policy disagreement or a different medical opinion. They viewed the criteria differently for reasons that, as the district court itself conceded, they didn't really articulate in exact detail.
Any questions? Thank you very much. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mason Bracken on behalf of the United States. The statutes and regulations governing the physical disability Board of Review authorize it to modify a veteran's disability rating and recharacterize his separation from military service. The board is not required to conduct its own physical examination, nor does this prevent the board from removing a veteran from his constructive placement on the temporary disability retirement list. As here, when the board is conducting a backward-looking review to determine a veteran's disability at a snapshot in time when he separated from service, it doesn't make sense to impose that requirement. And for Mr. Neely, that makes even less sense because a new physical examination would have taken place over 8 years after he separated from his honorable service in the United States Navy. So therefore, the district court correctly concluded that the board properly engaged in a records review without ordering its own new physical examination years later. And we also contend that the record also supports the disability rating that the board assigned to Mr. Neely at the time of his separation. This court need not second guess the military's judgment here.
Can you sort of answer my question that I asked your friend on the other side? Because it just seemed to me that the criteria for the 10% disability rating and the criteria for the 30% are kind of overlapping. And it seems that this particular service member could potentially fit either one. And I'm just wondering, are they meant to be mutually exclusive? Like you can only be one or the other, or is it the kind of thing where reasonable minds can differ and then it just has to be supported by the evidence? Or how are we supposed to look at these two different levels of disability rating when they seem to overlap? Yeah,
I think this is a situation where reasonable minds can disagree on the difference between a 10 and a 30%. The way I see it is that they are a difference in a matter of degree. A 10% talks about 10% talks about someone having symptoms that are mild or transient. And that their interference with like occupational or social interaction only comes about with significant stress on their life. Whereas in a 10%, there isn't that kind of distinction. So I could see there being reasonable minds disagreeing when they look at someone's disability records here.
There was like one criteria in particular, which was the ability to perform occupational tasks. And it seemed that the exam result indicated that there were decrease in work efficiency or intermittent periods of inability to perform occupational tasks. And that seemed to be a 30% criteria as opposed to a 10% one. So that was the one criteria that seemed to me to fall more within 30. I want to respond to that.
So, Your Honor, that statement does appear in the VA's rating of Mr. Neely that took place a couple months after his separation. But the VA rating also noted that within a couple months of his separation, he had a new job at an IT company, that he was performing generally well, and that his only anxiety was about performing well at work, not that it was anxiety particularly tied to his major depressive disorder or to his PTSD. So that specific language that Your Honor just referred to, I think there's a distinction in that VA rating between what the examiner observed the veteran say and what the VA examiner opines. And so that I take as just like a conclusory statement, this like inability to perform workplace tasks versus what the veteran actually said to the VA examiner and which is documented in those records.
Well, the records don't say that's what he said. They said there is an occasional decrease and intermittent periods of inability to perform. And then later, when the PDBR talked about it, they said he reports, that he did not indicate that they led to that. That was just the one criteria that seemed to fall more squarely to me within 30%. But I guess it's a more of a holistic view.
It is a holistic consideration on the service records, the later records picked up by the Veterans Administration, and Mr. Neely always had the option to submit additional evidence to the board. If he had gotten a new examination by a private doctor, that was close in time to his separation, he could have submitted that for the consideration of the board. He could have submitted a declaration that described his symptoms.
I'm sorry. I thought you were saying that a new examination would be 8 years after the time that was relevant. So would he do that?
I only meant, Your Honor, if for example, within a couple of months of his separation back in 2008, okay. Yes. If he had gotten another separation, he certainly could have submitted that to the board as well. And he did not. It is a comprehensive, holistic examination. And there are many instances where the VA in its assessment a couple of months after his separation noted that his symptoms were mild, that he had mild malaise. In his PTSD evaluation, it was noted that he had no impairment of his memory, that he was getting about 6 hours of sleep a night, that his symptoms were improving with psychological therapy. He was not medicated, and otherwise noted that he was improving with therapy. So I think that's more consistent with the 10% versus the 30%. And as here, when you're sitting in review under the APA arbitrary and capricious standard, it's highly deferential. Even the court's decision in Sissel versus Warmoth, which talked about the appropriate standard of review for a physical disability board of review decision, noted that it's highly deferential. And it's presumed that, our military officials, like other government officials, are acting in good faith and are presumed to be doing their job correctly.
So I have a question. So in your brief, you have a discussion of the ways in which the VA and military ratings, the evaluations have different purposes. And so as a reason, they might have different results. Do any of those differences suggest that the rating here should have been different? Can you sort of connect the way what the military is assessing might differ to the actual facts of this case and why they reached a different result?
Sure. So the purpose of the military's review, the review that this physical evaluation board is doing of him is backward looking. It's looking at what is the veteran's fitness for military service versus what the VA is doing is forward looking to what's the effect going to be on his civilian life, on his occupation. I think one of the factual differences here is that when Mr. Neely is in the service, he's shoulder to shoulder with other service members who have experienced similar things, who know his experiences and his story, and he has regular access to psychologists, therapists that he can talk to. That's less immediately available to him in a civilian setting, where he's not going to be immediately surrounded by other veterans who've experienced the same thing. I mean, this court recognized in Schmidt in 2020, a panel of this court, that the VA rating and the military's rating.
When I read Schmidt, it would have led me to be thinking in the other direction, because what Schmidt emphasizes is that the military is supposed to be asking, is he going to be affected for his rank, the role that he would be serving in the military, right? Not would he have, what are the PTSD impacts in a civilian IT desk job? Wouldn't that be a reason to suspect that the military would give a higher rating?
I see it in the opposite way. I see it as that's the reason why the VA might give a higher rating to him as opposed to the military giving him, I see here a 10% versus a 30%.
Why is that?
That they're just evaluating him for different purposes. They're evaluating how he's going to be affected into the future. And we know from the rating that the VA did here, from the evaluation that the VA did here, that he had a job within a couple of months that he was performing generally well, and he didn't perform. He did not report issues like panic attacks. He did not report issues like overly suspiciousness that would have led him to be interfered with in his occupational and workplace functioning. So I think that is one reason to distinguish between the ratings here.
Did you have an answer to my question about whether this has been finalized?
Yes, Your Honor. So the secretary did accept the Physical Disability Board's second recommendation.
Okay.
That is not in the record here. I don't exactly know why it's not in the record below. I do have a copy of it. So if the court directs, I can provide that to the court.
I think it would be helpful just to make sure we have that fact.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, we can provide that afterwards.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, Your Honor. We ask that the court affirm.
And Mr. Thayer, we'll give you 2 minutes.
So I want to turn first to my friend on the other side's discussion of the reasonableness of the 30% versus the 10% evaluation. I think it's important to emphasize once again, the VA considered all the mitigating facts in the record. So yes, can you go through the record and find things that support a 10% evaluation versus a 30% evaluation? Sure, you can. But that is not what the ultimate inquiry is. The ultimate inquiry is, do his symptoms more closely follow the 30% evaluation? And to your point, Judge Pan, about, you know, the intermittent difficulties he was facing at work, that comes from the 30% language, as you mentioned. The VA reviewed all the mitigating factors in terms of his work performance, why he might not be affected. They determined that the exacerbating factors were more probative, which is why they found that language for the 30%, which is why they rated him at 30%. So the distinctions that the secretary is making there are sort of misleading. The PDBR was established by Congress not because the VA's ratings were too high. They were established because the DOD's ratings were too low. And Congress wanted to bring the military up to where the VA is, not bring the VA down to where the DOD was. So I think that's an important distinction to remember, and that's why we have the regulations, which essentially give the tie to the service member in this situation. Lastly, I wanted to emphasize again, before we even get to the discussion about 10% versus 30%, was the PDBR's decision reasonable? We have to ask the question, did they even have the statutory or regulatory authority to conduct a constructive or retroactive reevaluation in the first place? And the answer is no. There is no statute that gives them the power to do that. You know, the 10 U.S.C. 1554A, which created the board, doesn't give them the authority to do that. The regulation, the VA schedule, doesn't give them the authority to do that. So they don't have the authority to do it. It's arbitrary and capricious for that reason. Thank you.
Case is submitted.